Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Always a pleasure to be able to share this hour with you. We begin today by taking a look at rainbow fruits and vegetables, the white mulberry extract, blood pressure larger than 130 over 85, watching birds, study shows women's experience less pain when in low-dose radiation. Is it good for you? No. All that and more. First study comes from the University of South Australia, and it says that men who consume colorful fruits and vegetables on a regular basis are less likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer. A rainbow of foods, and you know what those are. Those are giving all the micronutrients and beta carotenes, the antioxidants that can prevent prostate cancer, as well as speed up recovery among men who undergo radiation treatment. This was published in the journal Cancer and highlights the importance of the Mediterranean Asian diets that include these foods. Now, we have very healthy foods in the United States and probably in the neighborhood of about, I'm going to say, maximum 7% of the American population on a daily and regular basis actively seek to take those foods and beverages and do those things that impart health. That's not a small number. Let's just go clear up to 10%. Then you're dealing with about 33 million people. And yet, 93% of the American population, even being conservative, 90%, intentionally choose foods that cause inflammation, which leads to free radical damage of your DNA, which leads to different diseases. So when you choose foods that are rich in lycopene, like tomatoes and watermelons, papayas and red grapes and peaches and cranberries, and also selenium-rich foods, and like the nuts in particular, and then lots of starchy vegetables and good beans, you've got a good diet. You've got the right oils, right fiber, and you can do that. And that's what this study shows. So once again, a mainstream institution publishing in a mainstream peer-reviewed journal is telling you the best way to live a longer life and stay healthy is what those in the have been advocating in the alternative field for the last 100 years. Now, mulberries are delicious. I have a mulberry tree, actually getting 2 blooms per year. And these are not white mulberries. They're blue or purple mulberries. They last, I dry them, so they last indefinitely. But they're always best eaten fresh. Of course, you get stains in your hand, but those wash out. And it's great to get a whole bowl of mulberries, wash them, then throw them into a salad, something we generally don't do. Any way you eat a mulberry is going to be good for you. But this, according to the Guangdong Pharmaceutical University, the white mulberry clearly relieves diabetes symptoms in this particular rat model. 2 fractions of polysaccharides extracted from the white mulberry have been found to relieve symptoms of diabetes in this study. There's no reason to believe it couldn't also help with adults. This was published in the Journal of Ethnopharmacology. So, good study, information, non-toxic, easy, inexpensive. And if you can't get them fresh, which you probably won't be able to, get them dried. That's easy. I get all my dried fruits that I don't grow myself. I grow papaya and mangoes. Two types of cherries. And about 10 types of bananas. And again, in season, you eat what you can. But when you get a tree, a lychee tree that has over 1,000 lychees on it, big, beautiful, tasty. And at the end of every season, I cut off the top. I cut up to about 6 feet on the bottom, rake everything out and fertilize it and keep it clean. And that helps protect it from different types of insects infestating it and worms. So you get a really abundant crop. So try that yourself. Also, you can grow a lot of this in your own backyard. Even in Alaska, I can show you how to grow any kind of tropical fruit depending upon how you're protecting it, like a hydroponic or a, you know, a simple greenhouse. Remember when I was down the New Orleans, I went down to see what was happening in the ninth lower ward. The lower ward, it was lower than the water level by a substantial amount, and it was just devastated. But on one block, I was told, look for this school bus, and I saw a parked school bus on this block that you normally wouldn't see, and the roads were torn up, and there was a car in a tree that had been put there by the Hurricane Katrina. And there was not just one house, but the house beside it. And across the street, they had torn down a house that was completely demolished, and they made a compost pile. This was a huge compost pile. And they would go around to restaurants getting all their garbage, and that's what they made their compost pile. And then they would make organic compost. And people come and buy it by the big bags. But the house itself, it was interesting because there was a dichotomy. It had dirt floors, but all the beds were made, and the guys taking me a tour, and all the towels are stacked neatly. But you see through the window, as the prism of the light came through, you see all this mass amount of dust going up every time you step, because you're stepping on dirt. But you got to give the guys credit. They were doing the best they could with what they had. And I had a chance to spend a whole day there, and I filmed. I'm going to put that film up. It's one of the hundreds and hundreds of films I've never shown. In any case, it was just a wonderful experience because it was about repurposing life. And the interesting part was many of the people I spoke with, and I must have spoke with 50, it was all young people, many of them teenagers, and they set up a farmer's market. And every Saturday and Sunday, people would come. They had greenhouses. They had no electricity in the greenhouse. In fact, I didn't see any electricity in the house. But the greenhouse, they just made it with plastic. And they baled it with hay, and that gave it insulation. And you went in there, this was February, and the moment you walk in there, it was 30 degrees warmer. And everything was growing. And they were growing for restaurants. They were growing all kinds of microgreens and sprouts. It was just a wonderful experience. And then people would come, and they were lined up, 100 people at a time, to buy all the different fresh produce. And they did all this themselves. They didn't have a mentor. They didn't have someone come and do it for them. This is one of those, we can rebuild our neighborhood ourselves. And they did. And so I asked them a lot of questions, like, how are you doing? Oh, everybody for blocks comes here because they know they can get inexpensive, organically grown food, and it's healthy. And I asked, why are you doing it? Here's what the guy said. And he's standing in a whole group, and they were all nodding their head. He said, I had a choice. I could do this, or I could sell drugs. I'd make more money selling drugs. But once you start selling drugs, you can't just quit. You're part of a organized crime family. And they don't just let you walk away. And then you got all the problems that come with that, including frequently becoming an addict. He said, instead, all of us here chose, they were all teenagers, we chose to work here in our community. And now other houses want to be reclaimed and repurposed for the same way throughout the whole Lower Ninth Ward. It just gave you goosebumps hearing this. It did to me. And I said, well, anything you need, any help you need, here's my number, give me a call. What you're doing is exemplary. And it was. And they continued on. And they take all that in an old school bus that someone donated to them and make their deliveries. And they earn, the guy said he earns about $200 a week. And because they live in the house for free, and the utilities weren't even on. See, some people would say, no, it's too much. Everything's devastated. And yet these people, they had no resources to go anywhere. None of them were college graduates. In fact, none had been in college. But they took the higher road. Good for them. Anyhow, the point of what I was just saying is you can grow greenhouses, make greenhouses yourself, or you can buy them, depending upon what your needs are, personal use or commercial use, and that way you can grow almost anywhere. It's just one of the things that I wanted to share with you. Now, from the University of Bristol, which is in the United Kingdom, and the University of Eastern Finland, blood pressure greater than 130 over 85. Again, write that number down. 130, that's high normal, over 85, can cause heart damage in adolescence. Now, why is this important if most of you are not adolescents? And this was in the Journal of Pediatrics, mainstream journal. Because think of all the young people today who have heart disease, who are obese, and who have diabetes, all because of the lifestyle choices their parents have allowed them to make or made for them. Just go into any of the fast food chains in America, spend an hour there, and count how many young people come in and what they're eating, the number of calories they're eating, the amount of salt in that diet, the carbonated beverages which disrupt hydrochloric acid normal digestion. So elevated blood pressure and hypertension can cause early cardiac damage that lasts a lifetime. It's not reversible in most cases. The damage is not. Blood pressure can be reduced. The damage to the heart is a different story. And the European Society for Cardiology and the European Society for Hypertension classifies blood pressure 130 over 85 as high normal and 140 over 90 as hypertension. Whereas the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association classes blood pressure of 130 over 80 as hypertension. And by the way, I just helped a person who handed me a doctor's letter. And I said, are you aware of this? Yeah, a little bit. Did you actually read what the doctor said? No, I didn't open the letter. It's for you. And this person's blood pressure was 220 over 190 on three different medications and couldn't stabilize it. So said the doctor. 3 weeks later, the person, as of yesterday, had 127 over 68, completely normal. Of course, they are not taking the fast foods and the salt and the carbonated beverages and junk food diet and some supplements that help bring down the blood pressure, like celery seed extract is very good, etc. Cayenne. So just remember, if you got 130 over 80 and you should get your blood pressure checked at least once a month, get a home. Well, those little home kits are very inaccurate. Get a real, get a real blood pressure measurement. So anyhow, it was reported last year that increased systolic blood pressure during childhood was associated with the risk of premature death by the time you hit 35 to 40, generally 35. So imagine when we're looking at how many individuals, tens of millions, are unhealthy who are young, you've just cut their life in half. So it's time that we stop trying to be politically correct and got people on healthy protocols. Now, an adult, you can't do that. If a person, any choice, here's how I stand, so let's be very clear on this. I am 100% for freedom of choice, but I'm also 100% for people to become informed before they make their choice to see what are the likely consequences of the choice they make versus making a different choice. But I never interfere in that process, not even my own family. So whatever they do, that's their right to do. If they don't like the consequences and want my help, of course I'm going to help them. Just like all the people who got vaccinated and were condemning those who didn't, fighting them. The videos on the internet. You know, someone would show up without a mask and suddenly that person get beaten. And we had vaccine apartheid in the United States, thanks to Fauci and the other bureaucrats, unfortunately. But now, what about the real way of killing people? A lot of salt in the diet, processed foods, too much protein, and damage to the kidneys, because the kidneys can directly influence your blood pressure. So we have tens of millions of children who are at risk of dying by the age of 35 right now. And not a single word from our Surgeon General, the U.S. Public Health Service, the CDC, the FDA, nobody seems to care. Now, I don't believe that we have a nation of uncaring professionals. I believe that we have people who simply don't think that it's important, don't know the science, are not familiar with this, or simply realize the science, but realize when you start taking on something the establishment doesn't give a damn about, your child's health, that they could target you as well. Just giving you the information. And in fact, they took a look at 1,856 adolescents, and 1,011 of them were female, and they were 17 years old at baseline, and they were followed for 7 years until they were 24. And elevated blood pressure and hypertension, and evidence of heart damage that cannot be reversed, were assessed at baseline and followed up. And signs of heart structure damage are left ventricular hypertrophy and high relative wall thickness, whereas signs of heart function damage are left ventricular diastolic dysfunction and increased left ventricular filling pressure. So that's what's going on, and you don't feel it. You're not aware of it. That's why it's called the silent killer. So let's all be responsible, and let's get our blood pressure professionally checked every month. And if you're older than 50, make sure that you get it, because you're at greater risk. But now we've got all these young people at risk. Now, watching birds near your home is good for your mental health. University of Exeter and University of Queensland, two studies. So what they're saying is this. People living in neighborhoods with more birds and shrubs and trees are less likely to suffer from depression, anxiety, and stress. And this research by academics at the universities and the British Trust for Ornithology in the University of Queensland. Hundreds of people found benefits for mental health by being able to see birds and shrubs and trees around home. I love being around birds. In fact, it was 20 years ago that a woman called the Bird Lady, and she was known in Florida as the most knowledgeable person in the state when it came to birds. She had huge numbers of rescue birds, hundreds of all kinds, and she had them in, unfortunately, small environments. And she came by here one day. I'd never met her. And she said, "I hear you that you take in rescued animals." I said, "Yes." She said, "What do you have for birds?" And I said, "Well, I'm building a free flight enclosure, 20 foot high and 50 feet across. And that gives them, with perches, and et cetera, gives them a lot of room to fly until I can find them a home." And she gave me two doves. That's it, two doves. She said, "This came from a family whose mother had these doves for the last 3 years, but she has dementia, so they weren't being cared for. They brought them over to me. I heard you had a place. I'm giving them to you." So I go in there every day and sit with them for about a half hour. And they were very friendly. And at the end of a year, I opened up the door, let them go. And I love the cooing sound. And they could have flown anywhere. They didn't. They stuck around. And I have hundreds of birds, dozens of species, because there's always food. And when you have peacocks and you have all the other birds and squirrels and armadillos, in any given day, just this morning, watch an armadillo walk across the pasture, outrunning the dogs, and then in come the possums. And once they see they can get food, they stay around. In any case, today there's probably around 200 doves on the property, and they all stay in this gigantic hatch of bamboo that's about 60 feet high, and the predator birds can't get in there, so that's, they're safe. So at nighttime or dusk, they go in there. In the daytime, they're always cooing, and it takes you to a very peaceful, non-stress place. So if you have an opportunity to even build a wonderful environment, not the little cages, but an environment where they can fly, and that would be a good thing for you and them. In fact, cover your backyard, make it a free flight, and let them go in there. It's good for you and good for them. Next up, from the University of Colorado and Paris University, women experience less pain when holding a loved one's hand. Now, this is all about the exchange of energy, because scientifically, if you said, well, you're holding hands, do you know if there's any, I don't feel anything. And they're saying, well, there's nothing real there objectively to measure. That's not true. What is the one thing that no medical doctor, no nurse in the United States, no, that's not true for nurses, because I did the original study, and you'll see it up on, go up on MikeGarrianall.com and download scientific studies, and you'll see me in my lab coat and a bunch of other scientists sitting around Dr. Dolores Krieger, the head of nursing at New York University School of Nursing, and she's holding mouse number 47. And that was back in the early 1970s, by the way. And five other people out of 50 were able to heal six out of six times mice that had ascites tumors. And that had never been done before, showing that there is a capacity to transfer energy from one person to another. And so what we do is we never study in the sciences life energy. Now, in the Orient, they do. It's called Qi. In China, Japan, India, they all have prana. They all have different descriptions for what amounts to Qi, like Qigong, Tai Chi, energy healing. And it's also the environment you're in. The epigenetic epa, meaning larger environment, directly can impact your cells, your DNA, and it causes them to function in different ways, constructive or destructive. So when you're hugging someone, when you're bonding, when you're holding hands, when you're looking into each other's eyes, you're getting dopamine hits in the brain, but you're also exchanging that energy. What's the only thing that's missing when you're dead? Energy. Energy, what is never studied, energy. Wouldn't you think that might be important? Evidently not. But a small team of researchers, the University of Colorado and the University of Haifa and the University of Paris have found that women sense less pain when holding the hand of a person they love. This was published in our most prestigious journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. But you didn't need a study to know that, right? You didn't need a study to know that holding hands with those who we care about comfort us. And that's important. That's why when you go to the hospital and you see someone suffering, you hold their hand. They feel that. That encourages positive energy. From a university, Tampere University in Finland, comes a study published in the British Medical Journal. Low-dose radiation is linked to increased lifetime risk of heart disease. Exposure to low-dose ionizing radiation will give you an increase in heart disease. That's what this says. And yet, a lot of people get all types of x-rays, some necessary, but remember, you can get MRIs, which is not ionizing radiation, or you can get, even best still, for a lot of people, would be thermography, which is measuring heat differentiation, because a cancer cell is going to glow red hot on a thermography. Normal cells won't. Where there's an inflammation or infection, you can see it. Yet because it's a huge business, x-rays, then we don't pay attention to this. I'm just giving you the actual significant results. So wherever possible, don't get x-rays. Only if it's absolutely necessary and there's no other options. All right? That's the latest on health and healing. We're almost 25 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and remember two important numbers. One is that if you ever want to go to our archive because you miss a program, let me give you the number, please. 631-359-9463. That's 631-359-9463. If you're out and about and you're not at your computer, you can always listen to this show live by calling 641-793-7091, 641-793-7091. PRN.live, some of the best, most controversial, hard-hitting, truthful information in all of radio, prn.live, and go to GaryNall.com. All right? Rumble, got our hard-hitting investigative reports that are not censored. Odyssey, the same thing. And for the health information and the big series I'm doing now, and I believe we have about 80 new self-empowerment listings on Gary Noll YouTube. These are very powerful. We're getting phenomenal feedback from the people. If you like them, say you like them and share them. That's what it's for. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us today. By the way, last night I spent some time looking at all of the short videos. Some were longer. These are not professional videos. These are homemade videos where people would come to the dance parties. And I kept seeing certain people, Anna Goldwasser, Marit Eder. Those are two that I can remember. I must saw Virginia Reed in about 20 different dance films. Don't know where they're at. Some of the best dancers I've ever danced with in my life. But I saw so many tens of thousands of people in the audience dancing. And I hope that you've continued to be healthy and happy. First dance party was 1985 at the Red Parrot. We had 5,000 people. And there were families there. These were great outings that we all had. So when I come back to New York to premiere my new film, I will try to put together another free dance party for everyone. We had all ages there. It was just a hoot. And if anyone, well, I won't go into that now because I'm going to do a study that some people can do from home. In fact, the majority will have to do it from home because a lot of people around the United States, around the world cannot attend because our anti-aging clinical study is going to be limited. But this time I'm allowing a control group who are 50 and older, 60 and older, and the main group is 70 and older. So I'm only allowing 10 people who are 50 and older or 60 and older to be in this group. But for the vast majority of people who would like to be in it, you'll be able to do a control study from home. I'll get more into that later on. Anyhow, you might want to go back and take a look at some of your photographs from 1980s and 90s, 2000s, see how you've aged. Because the goal is, can we reverse the aging process? The answer today is absolutely yes, because we did it and we proved it and we weren't the ones who used the science and technology. I couldn't afford that. These were some really smart people who created and invented and patented this DNA methylation test. And that was along with another blood test we did for objective criteria, plus other tests on the Hamilton Depression Scale for measuring difference in depression and anxiety, which we got rid of almost 100% of people's depression and anxiety. But we can actually, one of the people, increase their lifespan, according to their studies, not mine, by 6 years on campus, 2 weeks. All right? And we had a lot of other important things happen that we did not count upon. And I'm asking the people, before I go into this in any depth, I'm asking those people to get their medical records before and after so we have irrefutable proof. Here's what it was before. And they all went away at the end. So we have those coming. Once they all come in, then I'll share that information with you. Because most people won't believe it. In fact, one of the people in the study, one of the scientists who was overseeing the study, said, here are the results. I can't believe this actually happened. But it did. And now I'm going to do part six, but this time I'm creating the protocols, and so I think I can get even more added life to people's lifespan, years to their lifespan. We're going to play a clip now. I thought you would enjoy thinking about this for a moment, and then call us with your thoughts. This is Jordan Peterson. It's a short 60-second clip, but boy, is it profound. Here's what he has to say, and let it ruminate. You can agree with it. You could disagree with it. I happen to agree with it. Let's hear the clip, please.
You're a young man. You see someone drive by in a Ferrari with a blonde, and you think, my God, he's got everything. And, you know, the woman in the car is a prostitute who's got a cocaine addiction, and her life is just one catastrophe after another. And he's had to lie and cheat his way into this position, and he's afraid that everything's going to come crashing down on him, and that's what you're jealous of. And it's just not that profound. You don't want someone else's fate. Man, your fate's enough. And your adventure is enough. It's plenty. It's more than you can ever fully realize. Just look at how much opportunity you have to make things better.
Think of that for a moment. I'm in a little different position than some people because I ended up having success very early in life, in my early 20s, and I've been there ever since, which gave me a chance to meet people I would never have been able to meet. I didn't have their education. I didn't have their culture. I didn't have their social connections. I was a bumpkin from the country. And yet, out of a simple fluke, which had nothing to do with health, that's what people don't realize, how to survive in New York when I had no money. I had friends that I made, I had no money. I couldn't go to a Broadway play. I had two shirts, two pair of pants, and back then we had that, what was it, wash and wear or something like that, where you can wash them and they would dry and they wouldn't wrinkle. And so I would wash the underwear, socks, pants, shirt, and I had one in the morning I could wear. That's all I had. I lived in what was actually, true story, it was actually a broom closet on 82nd and 3rd Avenue. And my landlord said I was getting a bargain. Of course, it was the summer of the hot heat. And I would go through sheet after sheet. It just soaked. The bathroom was out in the hallway. And after 6 months, he allowed me to go into at least a one-room apartment. But I didn't mind. It's just what it was. I worked at the UN, at the Institute of International Education. That's where I made my friendship with Ron Mielke. Still friends to this day. And during that process, I saw, why be angry at what we don't have and envious of what others have? Instead, let's try to be more creative ourselves. So one night, I got the group of us, and all of us were either partially employed but just barely hanging on financially. And I suggested that who had an apartment large enough that I could make some clothes in. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, what do you need when you go to a Broadway show? Back then, not now. Dress up, you know. So everybody had one outfit. And I didn't. And I said, well, I'm going to go over to Salvation Army. Come with me and let's select clothes for you. So we went over and we went through all these racks. And you could get a suit for $5, a pair of shoes for $3. And these were not cheap. These were like parkette. They actually, at that time, they labeled where it was from. And so we got some designer clothes and nice suits. We took it over to a friend's who had a two-room, a bedroom and a living room. And we put up a big table, and I did the cutting, and I did I did all of the fittings for the women and men I knew. So now, after about a month, everybody was dressed to the nines. They had every kind of outfit. So then when we go to a Broadway show, we'd stand out in the alley, and then when the intermission of the first act comes out, and people would talk, what'd you think of the first act? And they'd talk about the first act, and then we would, when they said come back in, we would all go in and find an empty seat. That was called second acting. We second acted baseball games, football games. We second acted all the rock stars, all the concerts, and all the Broadway and off-Broadway shows. Yeah, I had all kinds of ways that we could survive in New York on a shoestring. I wrote a little book on it, and made $50 on advance from a small publisher. But somehow or other, someone found that of interest, wrote it up, and I got a call from the Mike Douglas show. Joe Franklin show. I went on, and from that, people saw it. But then he wanted to talk about being young and healthy and athletic, and I was all the above. So we got into all this, and his guests were interesting because one of them was a famous musician who had some arthritis. So we were talking. Well, we go to a party, and one of the women at this party comes over to me, and she says, aren't you the health guy? And I wasn't a health guy, but I said, well, I talk about health. She says, come over for a moment. She takes me in this den. This is one of these Park Avenue dinner parties. And she says, now, I've had this problem for 4 years now, and it's really, I can't play tennis anymore. I can't play golf anymore. So I listened to what she had to say, and I advocated a diet, same diet as today, and some supplements, a lot fewer supplements then than what I would today, but what I knew. And about a month later, she gives me a call, says, miracle, my arthritis is gone. I've got a friend. Can I bring her over and you can help her? And I said, well, I don't think coming from Park Avenue to where I live on 89th Street here between Riverside and Weston Avenue, I just have a little tiny one-room humble abode. She said, I don't care. My friend won't care. So came over. She was amazed at all the books, you know, the whole ceiling, the floor, the whole walls, everything books. And that's how it began. She introduced me to probably 500 very famous, very powerful people. Some of the world's greatest artists. I mean, the greatest in history I had a chance to meet. I'm a young kid. I'm one step above being an idiot about everything. But I had humility. I listened. And I appreciated that if I had anything that could help someone, then that was good. Now, I take it from there to where I'm at. And along the way, I've counseled tens of thousands of people, over 3,000 very famous people, members of the royal family, members of the Hollywood community, the business community, three of my friends, lifetime friends, who became very successful, and through them, their friends, all helping them. Now, some used my help, some didn't. But what did all of them have in common? I mean, all of them. And I've never broken a confidence, and I won't. They were insecure. And as one of them said, who was sitting one evening in a transition in that person's life, and she was not, you know, she didn't have any qualms. Gloria Swanson was one. Greta Garbo was one. Hedy Lamarr was one. And she was watching Turner, her old, and there was the film that she, one of the famous film she was in, Charles Boyer, and talking about what's life like when you're 50 years old and the phone doesn't ring and you're no longer on anyone's envy list. Remember her saying that? I'm not on anyone's, so this is my life. I don't do anything, you know. And what do you think? I'm going to go work, you know, where everyone's going to go. Oh, aren't you? Oh, didn't I see? And she said, I don't want to deal with that. And, you know, she was happened to be a genius, in my opinion. In any case, the point was that almost everyone that I counseled, when you talk to them long enough, you see that they're also living by envy. If they only had that and more of that and a lot more of that, if they had that on each arm when they went out at night, then they'd be happy. No, they weren't happy. People you would think have everything in life don't have happiness. So what then is the value of anything else? I call it the candy cotton dream of the empty people. And just think now of what do we hear about people who are famous or successful? How exaggerated they make themselves seem. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if you're interested, but when you look at some of these sports websites, you'll see all these models who are attached to all these famous athletes, and you're thinking, what was the attraction? Physical? Okay. What happens when you separate? Why don't you ask Tiger Woods about that? He's getting sued for $30 million. But why is it that everything is have something in your life that exaggerates what is normal so that you look more relevant and exceptional? Then what are you really? When the lights are turned off, the stylist goes home, all of your attendees and assistants and your yes people, when they're in the other part of the world and you're there alone, what do you like then? And you start to see how hollow most of the people are when they're coveting what someone else has because you don't know what the problems are in that life. I do. You haven't counseled thousands and thousands of successful people to see why aren't you happy with all you have? You're miserable. Why? You're angry. Why? And then you see what he, Jordan Peterson, said was so accurate. I want to play a clip now, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this now, because remember I said this 4 years ago. I said, we have a lot of this woke stuff going on, and people are getting away with it because the silent majority has not found its voice yet. It's not enough pain yet to change. Now it's enough pain, and people are speaking up. Here's just one. And the people leading the movement for getting back to what is normal living, like where your family matters, your faith matters, your quality of life issues matter, Your sense of character and integrity, morals and manners matter? Where your sensitivity to others matter? Where your empathy for helping people other than yourself matter? Well, that's happening now. And it never went away. It's just a lot of people didn't know how to respond to the exaggeration of everything and trying to make an extreme exaggeration of something normal. And it's not normal. And they're fighting back. Good for them. Here's one woman, and I want to show you what they did to her. Now, mind you, they was not just a community education board. They is the entire Democratic Party, the entire media that is controlled by the Democratic Party, the entire apparatus that controls all issues and decides the narrative. That's what this woman's up against. Good for her. She had the courage. And now millions of parents across the United States are saying, I didn't think about reading the textbook. I didn't think about anything. And look, when you choose to do something as an adult, all right, you're making a choice. But a child doesn't have that choice. Therefore, get to the children, propagate them with your propaganda, and you don't have to worry about having anyone speak out, stand out, or fight back or talk back. They won't. You have the perfect citizen, one that is compliant at all times, even when they're suffering, and you're the cause of their suffering. They'll be oblivious to that. Here's what she has to say.
My name is Nicole Solis, and I am a mother from Rhode Island who was sued by the teachers union simply because I wanted to know what my kindergartner would be learning in school. And here's how this happened. I asked to see the curriculum, and my school told me I had to submit a public records request. The curriculum wasn't posted online, and it wasn't available in a school district. Then I asked them if they were teaching gender theory, and they told me that they don't call children boys and girls, and they embed the values of gender identity into every classroom, including kindergarten, and they didn't want to answer any of my questions further. They told me that they would communicate with me only through public records requests, and that is the only way I could get my questions answered. And when I did submit the public records request that they told me to submit, and I submitted hundreds because I had hundreds of questions, my school board then put my name on the agenda of a public school board meeting and held a public school board meeting to discuss suing me for submitting the request that they told me to submit. In a 5-hour-long school board meeting, they openly debated my moral character, my political motivations. They said that I was causing chaos, wreaking havoc, harming the district, harming children. One school board member even said she felt unsafe and started to cry.
Man.
Because, as you see, I'm really scary standing here right now. And they really just tarred and feathered me for asking questions. And they had never met me before, and this was the first school board meeting that I had ever been to in my life. They wanted to send a message to other parents that if you ask questions, they will come after you.
Exactly.
Well, at the end of this meeting, they decided that they wouldn't sue me for asking questions because they never intended on actually suing me. They just wanted to publicly humiliate me in a school board meeting that was a show trial. And when that happened, then the teachers union, the largest teachers union in the country, the NEA, did file a lawsuit against me to bully me and harass me with frivolous litigation and to send a message to other parents that if you ask questions about public education, they will come after you.
Okay, man, let me know what you think about this video in the comments.
Okay. So just imagine now, they can get away with harassing, intimidating one parent. What happens when you have 1 million parents, 10 million parents? And I believe that we're going to see a tsunami, a backlash against all these identity politics, critical race theory, which is complete racism nonsense without any accurate and scholarship behind, backing any of this up. And so it's happening. And now that we have completely deconstructed all the myths around Fauci, here is some interesting discussion and some exclusive information. Dr. Fauci engaged in, quote, an elaborate cover-up of the COVID-19 origins. Remember, he lied all the time. We don't fund it. Yes, you did. And listen to this. It's a short clip.
And Paul is back at it with his criticism of the former chief medical advisor to the president. Senator Paul, who is also a medical doctor, has for the last few years continuously condemned Dr. Anthony Fauci for his role in the COVID-19 pandemic. The two of them have been known to get in heated exchanges while under oath at various hearings. But now Rand Paul has told the story that Dr. Fauci engaged in an elaborate cover-up of the origins of COVID. Senator Paul said the reason Dr. Fauci didn't want any attention drawn to this or to his funding of the lab is that ultimately he would have culpability. There's a responsibility because for years he had advocated for gain-of-function research. He's even quoted as saying in 2012, if a pandemic should occur, if a scientist should be bitten by an animal and the virus gets out of the lab, it would be worth the knowledge. He continued, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins and others orchestrated a cover-up. There are emails between former National Institute of Health Director Dr. Francis Collins and Dr. Fauci in which Dr. Collins says this wouldn't be good for China, this wouldn't be good for science, meaning that it wouldn't be good for the business of science, for the money that changes hands. There's so much going on here, and when the American public finally finds out, I mean, there's going to be such dissatisfaction in this country like you can't believe. For example, we know that the NIH gave money to American universities who then gave it to military researchers with the title of general or colonel in the Chinese People's Liberation Army. Now, not only was Dr. Fauci the chief medical advisor to the president, but he was also the director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and a physician at the National Institute of Health. Because of these roles, Senator Rand Paul has repeatedly accused Dr. Fauci of knowingly funding dangerous gain-of-function research that could have led to the pandemic. This research basically can genetically alter an organism in a way to enhance the biological gene products, which means it can alter the pathogenesis, transmissibility, or host range of a virus. Fauci has claimed under oath that the National Institute of Health did not fund the research, alleged to have taken place at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. In July 2021, documents obtained by The Intercept revealed the NIH directed a grant of $3.1 million to the US health organization EcoHealth Alliance. Nearly $600,000 of the fund went straight to the Wuhan Institute of Virology to study bat coronaviruses. Dr. Fauci said that the NIH did send this money, but it was not sent to study gain-of-function research that could have been responsible for COVID-19. He backed up those statements in previous congressional hearings.
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans,
right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially.
Sky News host and author of What Really Happened in Wuhan, Shari Markson, has continuously spoken about Dr. Fauci's role in the pandemic.
As you know, I've been investigating Anthony Fauci's involvement in funding coronavirus research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology for months now. Some of these discoveries I have already reported. I found out that his agency had funded 60 projects at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. I found out that he wrote a paper back in 2012 where he argued that gain-of-function research, that's genetically manipulating coronaviruses to make them even more dangerous and more transmissible, Fauci said that this was worth the risk of a pandemic. And he even funded research, his agency funded coronavirus research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in conjunction with the Chinese military. I mean, this is just astonishing and unthinkable. Why would America be funding research at a Wuhan lab in conjunction with the Chinese military? Fauci was up to his neck funding research in Wuhan.
That's correct. And he's done everything he can to cover it up. And that's where he will be caught. Because all those emails, which are government property, they now have been unredacted and they're being read. And it's tying Fauci into a whole cabal of scientists that went on to write a positive article about it came from nature, not a laboratory, and how many millions of dollars those people got after they originally said to him in their emails, this is not nature. This is a man-made virus. So they all knew it. And then they all turned around and went just the opposite direction because there were millions of dollars that they received. So all that's coming out, and that's good. Here's something about Ricky Gervais on Will Smith. I thought a short little 60-second clip, but I thought it was interesting.
What did you make of that?
It was horrible. It was ridiculous. Poor Chris.
Yeah.
One of these about 130 pounds. He made a joke. It wasn't nasty. It wasn't derogatory. It was a sweet little lame joke. I don't know why Smith did it. I don't think he knows why he did it. But it was ludicrous. Whatever he said, and he didn't say anything bad, but whatever he said, if you don't like what someone says, violence isn't the answer. It was crazy.
Wow.
But I carry a hammer now on stage. No, I don't.
You carry the stick. You should just take the stick with you.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Last night on Tucker Carlson, he and his guest were issued this idea of, and it was Tulsi Gabbard, about the United States should get out of Syria. And there was a call for the defense secretary to get the troops out. And he didn't know why they were staying. I do. And I'd like someone in the audience to please send Tucker or his producers the following information. The reason that the United States is still in Syria is because of the oil. The United States occupies about one-third of a sovereign nation, Syria. And we never declared a war against Syria. But we've been funding the White Helmets, a terrorist group. We've been funding terrorist groups and with hundreds of millions of dollars. But the United States is seen guarding the oil fields that belong to Syria and the government and people of Syria, and hundreds of trucks and a convoy go out all the time. So a huge multi-billion dollars worth of stolen oil goes out of Syria on a weekly basis. And there are photographs of it. There are independent investigative reports on it. There's plenty of experts in the field talking about it. But somehow, Tucker's large producing team and research team missed all of that. Just educate him on, do a little deeper homework, and you'll see the truth about why we're in different countries. And it's never for peace, freedom. No, we're exploiting them. I'd like your feedback on the issues we've just discussed, but now why is that important? Because he just said he didn't know why he did this. Well, I can give you my supposition. Because he laughed. Look at the cameras. Will Smith was laughing until he turned to his wife, who was frowning. He then realized, okay, this is not good. Now, mind you, there's a name for men who have a wife that's cheating on them, and which is not a secret, and she's even discussed this on her show. And then he has to show everyone he's, you know, still a man. He walks up there and smacks this guy. Here's why all of this is a great insight into what I've been talking about for a long time, that it depends upon the tribe you align with. And if you're in the right place, the Academy Awards, at the right time, on the night the award's being given, and you have the right support system, everyone in the room, and you're the right person, then you're the right person to do anything and get away with it in that venue. Now, the fact that this is filmed and goes all over the world to tens of millions of people, is a secondary issue. And put it this way, how did he know that he wouldn't be arrested? How did he know that he wouldn't be fought back? How did he know that he would never get another role in Hollywood because they would say we do not allow people to benefit from all of the ass-kissing and all of the, you know, fake friends all over Hollywood and all the air-kissing? It's all a lie. Everything about Hollywood is a lie. And two of my closest friends throughout my entire life are two of the most powerful people in Hollywood. And I know everything that goes on. I've been at the parties. I've been in my friend's, when his mother died, he gave me the use of his mother's apartment above in this beautiful Italian mansion that was brought over from Italy in the early 1900s. And no one knew I was up there because there was a giant brick wall, but I would sit up and do my writing, and downstairs people would be talking. People who were supposedly his friends and bad-mouthing my friend, talking about how stupid he was for his generosity and openness. No, my friend was a very open and generous person, a very decent person, but he also was very poor at selecting a lot of people he allowed into his life. I saw what happens when you start representing a famous person. One of my closest friends owned one of the largest agencies, management agencies, and PR agencies in the history of Hollywood. He had over 120 famous clients. Everyone's a world-class actor. You would know them all. And yet it destroyed his life, destroyed his family, destroyed his wife, divorced him, children alienated from him. And I said, stop. He would come to New York and come into my office. I said, stop. These people that you're trying to help are using you. And the moment you retire, you'll never get a call. No. I paid for this guy's film and, you know, put my own money into it. And he got the Academy Award Best Actor. The moment he let it out that he was going to retire, he never got another phone call after that. He said, you were right. I destroyed my life chasing an illusion. That's Hollywood. So, but Will Smith is still a part of that, has been a part of it. Chris Rock, less so, at a different level. Why did they all give him a standing ovation? If you just saw someone assault someone on a subway and then they said, and I just won a lottery, would you give him a standing ovation? You see, in that place, at that time, with that support system and that idea, I can do whatever the hell I want, and all of us here can do exactly what we want, and we'll get away with it because we're different, we're unique, we're special, we are a tribe to be envied, to be coveted. We are the people want to emulate. And he was right. They gave him a standing ovation instead of booing him. Instead of escorting him out the theater. Because what if he had gone out of the theater and did the same thing? He smacked a small little stranger. Would he have gotten away with it? Not. He would have been arrested. Been a different view. So you see, you can praise God and sing at the highest. And can we get a yes in a church? Walk out on the street and do the same thing. And you won't get a yes. You'll say, we're taking you to Bellevue. So just imagine tribes that can get away with anything as long as they stay in the World Economic Forum, the Council on Foreign Relations, the North Atlantic Council, the CIA, the FBI. Everyone is a part of a tribe. Not all tribes are peaceful, but they are all filled with people who believe that they're not going to get caught. And indeed, when was the last time you saw someone in the FBI sent to prison or the CIA or Homeland Security? You haven't. And you won't, because they're more powerful than you and your tribe. Just my thoughts. I'd like to hear from you, 888-874-4888. And in the moment that we have, before we go over to Utrecht Lead, I also want to mention that coming up, or at least over the weekend, we had so much response to yesterday's special that it is still going on today. And so you can call our number and you can get that special if you want. All right, that was from yesterday. I just want to let people know. But you can also call Luann because we have almost filled up both the anti-aging and the health retreat, the 14th to 24th of May. If you want to come and just relax, laugh, de-stress, swim, a bike, power walk, gym workout, water aerobics, great food, wonderful lectures, energy workshops, all kinds of energy workshops, and a lot more in one of the most beautiful, idyllic environments in America. Good. You deserve it. Give yourself a break. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. If you want to be a part of a very strict but fun and adventurous anti-aging study group for 2 weeks, and you're going to take some blood workups before and after, you're going to be on certain supplements, we have a very specific regimen. It's not the same as the guest. There's two different things going on, but we got plenty of room and it's easy to do and we're limiting the number. And you want to de-age? You can. Can we prove it? Yes, we just did. We make scientific history. The article is being published in a peer-reviewed journal, and we have a lot of scientists who are now supporting our efforts to see that this is done, giving their input. That's how they support it. I wish they'd give us some money because we could pay for the blood workups and the supplements, which would help save people money. I'm still in the effort of doing that. Going to have another meeting this afternoon, see if I can't get some money to help those of you who are coming And if we get the money, then that will reduce all the expenses by that measure. Anyhow, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I hope you take it. Call 903-881-7008. That's Luann. You got to pass through her to get in. 903-881-7008. You got to be disciplined, focused, and want to change your life for the better. Have a nice day, everyone.